Welcome to episode 6 of the TM podcast. Today we go a bit technical. This episode is about UIs, UI layers, UI technologies in TM. And we are very proud to have Dragoš today on the other side of the table. So he's the interviewee. He's our responsible god of UI in TM. So maybe we start with a short who's who as usual. So Dragoš, maybe you first.
Greetings. I'm Dragoš Florescu. I work with Bernd in Freight Order team, but I'm also responsible for user interface in SubTM. And therefore, I have acquired during the last couple of years quite a considerable amount of experience so that I can answer a couple of questions. I hope, Bernd, that you reserved a series of podcasts about this topic because we can talk for hours.
Yeah, we start with 1 hour. Basically, Dragoš knows everything about TM UIs, to make it very short. Eh? Thomas?
Oh, I'm Thomas Quintus. I'm the Scrum Master of the Freight Order Management team.
Yeah, and I'm Bernd Dittrich. I'm one of the architects together with Dragoš in the Freight Order Management team. And Thomas and myself will be the listeners today and try to learn a lot about UI technologies in TM. Good. So maybe first we can give a very high level overview about about today's approach, how to look into UI. Yeah. So yeah, maybe Dragoš.
So yeah, hopefully the time will be merciless with us and we can discuss all the topics that we had in mind. But if not, we can leave it for another session. We're trying to have a very basic overview of the technology that are involved in sub-transportation management UIs. And we're going to discuss all the layers that are involved. And perhaps we can also say a couple of words about extensibility.
Yeah, I think extensibility as such, that's an episode, at least one episode. Yeah. In itself, but maybe to give an idea what are the layers affected by extensibility. Okay, so basically our idea was to go top down. So we start from the browser, we can come to that later, or from the user interface layer, so what you are looking at, down to the very basic spec on the server. That's today's idea of how to look into.
Perhaps going to that direction, a couple of introductory words. When talking about user interface of SubTM, we have to define what is SubTM in first. SubTM as a product, as a SAP product, includes the software component SubTM, which is developed by us, but also includes another software components, for instance, SCM basis, supply chain management basis, or even another product versions, the corresponding underlying version of NetWeaver. And in those layers or products, there are user interface technologies which are not ours. For instance, we're talking about customizing transaction. We know that we have a standard way of dealing with customizing, and this belongs to Basis or to NetWeaver. When we're talking about master data, transportation specific master data, it's not maintained in TM, but it's maintained in SCM Basis. So we have transactions for maintaining locations or business partners. All these underlying transactions are mostly sub-GUI based transactions. So everyone knows about sub-GUI. It's not even worth having a podcast about it. We are going to concentrate ourselves on our own screens, which we developed explicitly. And unlike the other layers, we are talking now about web-based screens. In this case, the technology is WebDimPro, and we're talking about everything in a moment. But we're going to concentrate on TM's own screens.
And maybe some just for sake of history. So today is 2013, March 2013. We are talking about TM 9.0. where we are not on HTML5 or UI5 yet, but we are still on WebDoom Pro. We come to that later maybe. So that is also the focus for today, right?
Exactly.
So our transactional UIs like freight order UI, the forwarding order UIs, etc., cockpit, all that goes down to one UI technology. WebDoom Pro is
It's a good point. The cockpit, we also have in our own developed transactions some non-standard technologies on they're standard technologies, but they are deviating from the general look and feel. For instance, in transportation cockpit or in transportation network cockpit, we use Visual Business, which is a different product, a separate product from us. We include some screens, and they are worth a mention when we're coming back later.
I think if we come to that, but I think the most important topic of today is really talk about our bread and butter UIs, so bread order UIs, booking UIs, red unit UIs, everything, let's say.
That we normally work in TM with.
Exactly. So we can, of course, since it's a podcast, so we have all time in the world, so we can swing by all the other technologies, but the focus will be today about WebDoom Pro, basically, right? We can always say that word. Okay. Yeah.
So basically, when one look at our user interface, first we'll have to consider the client. The client computer in this case. The normal old-fashioned screen had subGUI as a client. In this particular case, we are talking about WebDoom Pro-based screens, which are actually HTML pages. So simple, normal HTML pages, which can be rendered in any supported browser. The supported part of the statement means that one has to check the product availability matrix of NetWeaver and see which browser versions are supported by NetWeaver. Currently, we support Internet Explorer, Mozilla Firefox, Google Chrome, Apple Safari as of now.
Okay.
Yes, and
I think Internet Explorer starting from Internet Explorer 8, right?
So 7, I think it's supported already technically, but always NetWeaver encourages people to use the latest versions.
And sometimes you also have to use the latest version, right? So for some, if you now talk about browsers, I think so if you do a backend upgrade, sometimes that means, of course, that also NetWeaver stack has been upgraded. And then there are also this also might come with some change.
Not the latest version, but the latest supported versions, because the browsers, especially Chrome and Firefox, have a very high frequency update cycle, and not always the latest version, which is available in the net, is also supported by NetWeaver.
So that means one thing you have to check if you decide I go for TM 9.0, of course, now since it's in GA, you would check then, okay, what are the supported browsers versus what are the browsers currently running at my customer, and then maybe start thinking about how does this matches. And also I think we come to that later, but the performance is typically also very very affected by the latest.
So talking about this, it's not only the browser version, but in this particular case the responsiveness of our screens is of course influenced by factors like the power of the client machine. So if you have an older machine, you might expect slower rendering times in UIs or something like that.
And also we are kind of profiting from the JavaScript wars. So the JavaScript performance is also very important for us. Yes. And lucky us, that is also one of the benchmarks the browsers fighting against. So that's why I think, generally speaking, also see that, right? We did some measurements on what was it? Internet Explorer 8 versus 9.
And it was versus Firefox and versus Chrome.
Yeah. And I think there was a factor of 3 or something between them. Also, that's purely between 8 and 9 Internet Explorer. And that's only on the UI side, just by upgrading the browser with the same hardware. So that's an important
piece. We're talking about factors of run times in browser to render the page. So assuming that the old HTML code came from server. Now times to render the page, and in case of complex WebDimpro screens, it's not neglectable. So we're talking about seconds, 1 second if you're lucky, or perhaps even two if an unusual combination of browser and client machine.
You can check it yourself, right? That's this famous shortcut. What is it? Control Shift
Alt P.
Yeah. You press Control Shift Alt P, and you kind of
you'll see
refresh or do a step.
Pop-in window in any WebDimpro screen that will show you the response times, including rendering times, but also including the server response times and also another informations which are very good for troubleshooting problems.
Okay, No, we're deep diving a bit, but still, so far, as a high-level orientation, we are still on the outermost layer, so on the interpretation of the HTML side. And now, first thing, very simplistically, we talked about showing our UIs in a browser. Yeah. So implicitly, that is one option, right?
Yes. Of course, at SAP, we also have shells. Currently, we have two shells in the world. One of them is the Enterprise Portal, which is also a browser-based solution. And second is NetWeaver Business Client, which comes in two incarnations, but let's say there are two sets of features which are fundamentally different. One of them is the NetWeaver Business Client desktop client, so it's a rich client like SubGUI, which has the ability to render web-based screens like WebDimpro, but also SubGUI screens and other technologies. And
that's really a piece of software I have to install.
It's a piece of software, it's a local client, has to be installed, and it's also worth mentioning, it renders WebDimpro screens using exclusively Internet Explorer rendering engine. So if you have NetWeaver Business Client, the pages are rendered with Microsoft's Internet Explorer rendering engine, no matter what browser it's set as default on your computer. And that means we always have one limitation. It's a Windows-only client.
It's NetWeaver Business Client install version, so to say. I think there are also versions of their business client and dependencies to TM versions based on our NetWeaver versions, right?
So yes. So
where are we now with TM9?
With our TM9, we support NetWeaver Business Client 3.5 and NetWeaver Business Client 4.0. It's less of a TM dependency, but rather a NetWeaver release dependency on that.
And since we rely on a NetWeaver release, so it's an implicitly also
reliance on such limitations. Technically, I think it also works in NetWeaver Business Client 3.0, but we never tested it. And
I think it's not officially supported, right? And I think there's also dependency. I think the NetWeaver Business Client 3.5 and upwards, it's only available for Windows 7, or is it also XP? I mean, there are still some XPs in the world, I think. I think that wouldn't be supported, right?
Last year, 3.5 on my XP machine until I was forced to upgrade.
Okay.
So I think it works on any.
Okay, Windows. But still, you would have to check if it's officially supported if you want to go productive with that, right?
We recommend going for NetWeaver Business Client 4. Mm. It's it includes tab. I mean, it has a lot of features. So it includes tab browsing and a lot of new features that allow a smoother integration of SubGUI screens. I see no way why not use it. It's released since more than half a year. Mm. It's stable enough. Yeah.
And I think that's also just to mention that that's also our kind of default target, right? The business client is where we test on and run our scenarios internally also on, right? The latest version, of course. So
the second incarnation of NetWeaver Business Client is the so-called Zero Footprint NetWeaver Business Client, which is actually a 100% browser-based solution. It's supported by it's the same shell, so it has a similar look and feel like the desktop client, but it runs exclusively in browser. It has some limitation because of that, but basically can be used in our transportation management roles, which are the basis of any network business client, menu structure or whatever, contains mostly web-based screens. So that means zero footprint version of network business client is a viable option for most of us, for most of our customers.
But then if you want to see like VA01 or any, let's say, ERP transaction, how would that be different between the installed business client and the zero footprint business client, where I don't have to install anything, so I'm just on the HTML mode?
In assuming that SAPGUI is installed on the computer, the desktop client of SAPGUI will render SAPGUI screens using SAPGUI. So we'll make a short case statement and look, okay, this is a SAPGUI, I'm running SAPGUI. But Zero Footprint will try to run the HTML representation of the SAPGUI screens. Most of SAPGUI screens, most of SAPGUI transactions can also be released to be run in some sort of a fake HTML. It looks more or less the same as the SAPGUI screens. It has some limitation and has some bugs. So that's what it is used when using Zero Footprint client. We actually do not recommend to do that. But luckily, most of our most of our product screens can be used without having to rely on SAPGUI transactions. As I mentioned, we have SAPGUI transactions, but they are merely customizing or setting up master data, which are more or less one-time activities. The transactional data is completely modeled in our TM screen.
So I think the exception from that would be you are on a POWL for OTRs and you want to see the OTR, order-based transportation request, which is a TM representation of a sales order or purchase order. And then if you want to see that sales or purchase order, then you would have an old GUI UI, and then I think it makes sense to have that.
You can still use also this HTML representation of SAPGUI. You can see the data. It's not very nice to work with, to change data or something like that. It is technically possible, but for displaying data, I think it's quite sufficient.
Okay.
And the third one, not spending too much about the third shell, it's the portal. Of course, you can import PFCG roles from SAPTM into portal and then have a TM running portal. It works. It's again a browser-based solution, but then you'll come up to the limitation of SAP Enterprise Pro portal regarding browsers. Technically, our TM screens work in any browser supported by NetWeaver, but Enterprise Portal has a different set of requirements regarding browser, and I think currently Enterprise Portal supports only Internet Explorer. So that means even if our screens would technically run in other browsers, if you have Portal as a shell, you're kind of stuck with an Explorer for the time being.
There are hopefully browsers which are supported by both, right? So that would be Internet Explorer then, right?
So yeah.
It's not exclusively.
Yeah, no, it's not exclusively. Okay. Yeah.
So maybe let's say the smallest common denominator would be
Internet Explorer.
Latest version, most likely, right? Okay.
But you would have either.
But if your company has a Firefox policy or something, then you would have to think about, you would anyway, you wouldn't be the portal customer.
I encourage any customer that has problems with the dependency on Internet Explorer to raise a ticket and have this triggered. Perhaps we'll see better days when more browsers are supported by our portal.
But please raise that not on our component, but on the portal component. It's not in our hands, right?
Indeed.
Okay. So just to wrap up. So basically, first of all, we said normal UIs, for freight order UI, etc. It is an HTML site, which can be displayed in a set of browsers.
Yes.
Basically, major ones. It can be displayed in a NetWeaver Business Client, which is an installed version of the NetWeaver Business Client, correct? Where you really have advanced also search features, etc. Right? There is, it's a nice, basically a sub-GUI successor, nicer version of it. But we won't go into the details of that one. I mean, that's a topic in itself, right? And then you, as a kind of a fallback, you can also have that NetWeaver Business Client as a zero footprint version, which means it is kind of simulated in a browser then, right? And lastly, portal. So you can also include or display our HTML piece in the portal, but then you are kind of bound to Internet Explorer.
As of today.
As of today. And we already mentioned what today is, huh? So we don't have to repeat it. Okay, so the users see HTML sites, and we also already mentioned, so first, let's reemphasize that. The faster the machine, so the end user's machine, the CPU really matters also for the rendering. Yes. If you're working like in a cockpit, but also in the other UIs, it's not a, let's say, it's not the kind of HTML that you would use for your website. Yeah. So not Hello World style, but it's really complex, nesting levels, etc., which is really both affected by CPU performance. Maybe, is it also GPU?
No, not
really.
Quite.
I mean, depends on what your browser really does with JavaScript and by JavaScript.
It's basically a CPU intensive process because of the two reasons. Ben, you mentioned nesting, so that it's an incredibly complex HTML page with a lot of nesting level. But also it's a lot of JavaScript going around, especially the interactions are implemented as an asynchronous XML HTTP request call, so the famous AJAX. So that means a machine that processes Java slowly will experience longer responses time.
JavaScript, right? Yeah, no, JavaScript. After all that exploit, so it's JavaScript. JavaScript, you're on the safe side, no worries.
Yeah. No Java.
JavaScript.
Yes, so this is a change compared to the sub-GUI, where more or less any machine could run sub-GUI as a client. Now we have to rely on the performance of the browser.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we're coming about, we talk about HTML page, but let's go one step farther. So it comes from the SAP server, from the SAP system. But we as a developer do not write HTML code directly.
So far,
yes. We're talking about WebDimpro screens, and we have to explain what WebDimpro is. WebDimpro is UI technology by SAP, which is more or less about 10 years old.
And still alive.
For how long one might answer, I think it's still
showing up on the horizon.
It's still up and run, so we have.
We can maybe. We also have some UI 5 UIs. We can maybe talk about that later. Then that's a special topic so far.
It's a model view controller based framework that allows developer to model screens in Object Navigator in SAP, and then this engine will convert the modeling, which is done by developers in SAP system, into HTML pages. So we're talking about WebDimpro. We have, between WebDimpro and the outside world, we have the so-called WebDimpro rendering engine, which converts the internal modeling of WebDimpro
into our work
into HTML page. This is again something that an application cannot influence at all. An application can only say, I'm building this screen in a what you see is what you get manner. And this is then translated into HTML page and the corresponding JavaScripts that are required for the page to work interactively. So this, again, something that we cannot influence. So we try as much as possible to influence how this translation works. But we had circumstances where we see that there is a nesting level that we find unacceptable. Then we go to the colleagues that handle that and try to find solution for that.
But we are not building that WebDimpro, but of course it's a standard technology we rely on. And you said, so we define our UIs,
Yes, so that's normally a web dimpro developer. Now, as I said, this is actually web dimpro was a technology which was originally intended for the Java application server part of NetWeaver business, NetWeaver, about 10 years ago. It was because at that time there was no counterpart of the ABAP UIs, ABAP-based UIs. And it was developed for a long time. Web dimpro was purely a Java technology, so only for the Java UIs. And then for unification reasons, was also ported to ABAP. And that brings difference, meaning that there it comes from the Java world. Designing and working with a screen, with a web dimpro screen in SAP world in ABAP coding, it sometimes feels a bit strange. It doesn't feel for a Java developer or for one that works heavily with model view controller based UIs, but for an SAP developer who developed for a long time ABAP based screens, it seemed a bit different and quite with a quite steep learning curve. And this brings us to the next level that we have in our technology stack, which is called Floor Plan Manager.
So just to wrap up, so that the task of Web Dimpro really is to translate a definition of a UI into HTML and JavaScript yes. code on the server side, and that page is then transferred to the client.
To the client.
And now we come to the next layer, the so-called Floor Plan Manager.
Yes.
But what is the task of that layer?
So Floor Plan Manager was, there is another framework that allows an application to develop web with Dimpro-based screens in a more productive manner. Originally, it was simply developed as an engine to allow the users to combine various web dimpro-based screens together in a floor plan.
So that you have like a list and details or something like that? Or
no, I mean as a screen, like a complete screen when you have different lists, different forms and this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Each piece of them was a separate web dimpro component and they were put together freely and interchangeably in a so-called floor plan.
That's now, where the name come from. So that
plan manager.
Was meant just as a high-level tool to combine already existing UI blocks, right?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
That's why UI blocks. Floor so plan
in a manager. Floor plan manager, the basic concept is the floor plan, which is a collection of so-called UI building blocks or UIBBs. On these UIBBs are generally web dimpro based blocks.
Let's take an example. So in a freight order, that's general data would be one UIBB.
So freight order would be one floor plan, which is in our case the floor plan called overview page, OVP, which we'll hear a lot about it in the next podcast series, perhaps. And for instance, general data would be one UIBB, item list would be one UIBB, and so on.
And I think one idea is also behind the UIBBs that they can be reused, right?
Yes, they can be reused and combined differently by another floor plans. In the last couple of years, then Floor Plan Manager took the next step from simply combining existing building blocks, and they developed the so-called generic UI building blocks, GUIBBs, which are a very powerful way to develop web dimpro based screens. Basically, they have hidden the complexity of designing a web dimpro screen into a generic component, which then is controlled by a configuration, which is defined in a corresponding editor. We'll come to that later. But all the repetitive tasks of designing or modeling the web dimpro screen and to handle the interaction are handled by these generic UIBBs.
Let's take an example.
So let's take
an
example.
What would be a generic UI? We talked about the freight order.
Yes, so let's talk about list of items.
List of items.
So normally when you design a web dimpro screen, for that, you'll have to go into WebDim Pro editor and define a window, define a view, define a controller, then design the view, put the columns there. You have to define a so-called WebDim Pro context, which is the container for the data. Then you have to design methods that will fill that context from your tables, from your function, from a persistency, and then you'll design the interaction, you'll have to design the buttons, you'll have to assign events and react to events, and so on, and make everything work together. In GUIBB world, you only have, you'll have a generic component, and you have to create a configuration. You go to a special screen. When you say, I want to create a configuration for a list, so I want to create a list configuration, you'll have to provide some information. I'll come to that later, which gives you which is the field catalog, which are the fields that I'm allowed to put on the screen, and then you'll put them on the screen.
Okay, it's just to be slow enough for me. So we would have, as we said, we now want to have a list, right? Yes. And you already mentioned a lot of things to be defined for just a list of items, that is, just to represent the data from the database. And so the idea of that generic UIBB would be that you have a kind of a generic list that is, let's say, ready to use. But the we then would say, okay, we have a list, so we reuse that list, and we configure that as the item list of the freight orders. Yeah. Okay, so WebDimpro would provide this generic list UIBB, and there's, I think there's also things like a form UIBB for the general data, like flat form.
Yeah.
And then we, as part of that floor plan manager, and here the name starts to get misleading, it's more like a configuration, UI config manager then, right?
Yes.
We would just say, okay, now we define what are the columns of which are available in that list, which are read-only. That would be then a configuration of that generic list UIBB, right?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason why this is better, or let's say it increases productivity, is that this generic WebDim Pro component requires only one application-specific function, which is a normal ABAP class. That everybody knows, which is a called feeder class. Of course, this class needs to implement certain interfaces, but apart from that, it's a normal ABAP class. So all the complexity which are strange to ABAP world are hidden for the application. And this functionality is called the feeder class. And basically, that's it, what it requires to have a GUIBB, an FPM GUIBB.
So that feeder class basically is feeding that generic UIBB with information, right?
Yeah. So we have two kind of information. First of all, you have the static information, the runtime, the design time information, which what is, for instance, the field catalog, which fields are available from my screen, or
and
an action
what kind
catalog.
Of fields they are, right?
Yes. So a normal field catalog with all the field descriptions, and an action catalog, which says which are the actions that I'm supporting, and that's about it.
Action things like which would typically map to a button or maybe a link or something.
A button or a link or pressing enter or something like that. So the events that I'm reacting to.
And that feeder class is part of which layer now? Is it the WebDimpro layer, the floor plan manager layer?
It's a part of floor plan manager. So it has to implement some floor plan manager interfaces, and it has different methods. So I say the first part is the let's say meta information required. This is required, so such feeder class is required before I even get into this configuration tool, because we need to provide first the field catalog and the action catalog. Then we go to the configuration and design the screen. What you see is what you get in a very nice editor, and put the screens on the field and do some UI adjustments. And then we'll go back to the feeder class and implement then the runtime specific interface methods, which are then responsible of getting data from the persistency and pushing it back to floor plan manager.
Persistency is database for those of you not developing like every day.
So from database, from our engine, and then reacting also to events on the screen. So when the user presses a button, what should happen, or reacting to change. And when the user changes a certain value in the screen, FPM provides a so-called change log with all the fields that were changed, and we see the old value and new value, and then you decide what you do with that change. But
Josh, that's something just to slow down for me again. So we said that feeder class also gives us the connection then to the UI definition, right? That, that what you see is what you get. So how would I, let's say I'm an interested TM consultant and I want to look into that configuration and see what is that definition of the UI? How would I get there? Is there?
Yes, in good question. In WebDimPro base screen, there is a, by using the right-click mouse button, there is a contextual menu, and one of the menu entries is called Technical Help. When clicking on Technical Help, then there is a pop-up window appearing with some information, some debugging information. But most of all, we have a link there to the UI configuration of that generic UI building block. By clicking on that list, on that link, we're jumping into the configurator, and then we'll see exactly how the fields are defined there.
Okay, I think there's also one user parameter, right, that FPM expert, and after listening to that podcast, you can call yourself an FPM expert, most likely, if you listen carefully. So I think you can also have that FPM config
The parameter is called FPM underscore config underscore expert. And if you set this parameter to X in your user parameter, then you'll also have additional buttons on the application toolbar on the right side, which will allow you to jump to the configuration from there.
But it's a button called show configurable areas. Then you see a fancy blue layer, right? And then you can double click, and then you navigate a bit more nicely into that configuration. Yeah. Maybe we'll see the different UI.
There, for that questions on our SAP community network, SCN, there are a couple of documents written by FPM development team. They have quite a few how-to guides and nice articles outlining the concepts of FPM. So that's why probably we should not go too much into detail with FPM because it's a non-TM specific tema and it's quite good documented outside our team.
I correct myself. So after reading that additional message, you can call yourself an FPM config expert and then set a user parameter, right? So that would mean in SCN, you would search for FPM.
Floor plan manager. Search for floor plan manager. There is a space on SCM for floor plan manager, and there is a lengthy list of posts by the FPM team. And
do they have a podcast? Not yet.
Not yet, yes. But it's quite an instructive read there. Yes. Good. And perhaps one word before finishing with floor plan manager. So as I said, as a wrap up. So basically, what we need when developing an FPM based WebDimPro application is that we have a normal ABAP class that we all know how it works and function, and has a very clear interface about which data needs and which data provides. And the rest of it, so handling WebDimPro component and context and views and windows and everything that is related to that model view controller modeling and interaction and everything, it's done by this generic component. So it's completely transparent to the user, and we don't
that
have
means
to...
means the user doesn't care?
Yes, the user, I mean the developer in this case. The developer, we are using that product, so we are users for a floor plan manager. It's completely transparent, and it allows us to concentrate on our tasks. So that means building the screen, designing the screen, and then figuring out how to transpose this design, this vision into reality and matching out to our database design and model.
So basically, FPM is a tool which is used to redesign the UI and then also takes care of all that magic to false data. Okay, we come to the data stuff maybe later with the next layer, but to transport data into WebDynPro.
Yes.
And back, of yeah. course, and also supporting us with the design. And I think they also have like different layers for us and then for configuration on the customer side and personalization. Should we yes. visit that one briefly?
Yeah, perhaps
as well?
You can say a couple of words about mm-hmm. it. This is a WebDynPro concept, actually. WebDynPro offers the so-called development layer and then a so-called customizing layer, and the third layer is a personalization layer. In the case of floor plan manager based UIs, the development object is the configuration that we create at SAP in mm-hmm. our standard systems, which is actually more or less an XML string containing the meta model information as we defined in that editor. But the next level is the so-called customizing layer or admin personalization, which, as the name says, is a customizing record, client-specific, which allows a customer to modify the standard configuration in a modification-free way. In this customizing, there are saved the differences that the customer deemed to be necessary. So if you delete a field, only that deletion is saved into that customizing. Or if you add a couple of fields, only those fields will be saved. And at the runtime, WebDynPro merges that customizing with the standard configuration by following the principle, the customizing wins. So the customer desire wins, has higher priority that the configuration that we saved. But this allows, for instance, the customer to add a couple of fields, but then still receive via the standard configuration further developments in this area.
Mm. If he had a field, he would still see it, but if he has hidden another field, then it would still be hidden.
Okay. Customer here means the administrator.
The administrator of the customer.
For all users.
Yeah, exactly. Company. So that's... Yeah. That's a user-independent adjustment that is done.
How would you go there? I think there's kind of admin mode, suffix.
Yes, you have to enter there is a URL parameter that can be set. Sub-config-mode has to be set to X. It's again something that it's very well documented in that SCN space for mm-hmm. from the floor plan manager. They have a very nice how to enhance guide, which deals to that floor plan manager specific.
I think that is also mentioned our enhancement guide
yes.
For TM.
So we have also an enhancement guide in which mm-hmm. we deal with TM specific but questions, but also the technology specific points are also described there with nice screenshots and everything. And the third layer is, of course, the user personalization. If the personalization mm-hmm. is allowed by the customer, the user can do some limited adjustments, for instance, hiding some fields or changing the sequence in of the columns in a table, or creating personalization variants.
Hiding a column in a table and call support. Where's my column?
Where is
table?
My column? Yeah, that's why, for instance, in some circumstances, the customer would won't allow the personalization. But technically, it's also possible to. To enhance the screen in this way. Yeah, not enhance it, but personalize it, as the name
just
says.
Technically, I mean, I think we have some of the fancy features in our UIs, like with the right mouse click, you could set default values for document types or so. That is also then in the
personalization
layer. So
yeah.
If you turn off personalization,
you
would also get
feature,
rid of
yeah.
those features then.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's a kind of a trade-off
that we need to do. Yes.
Okay. But it's also a very nice feature with the right mouse click. You can define default values if you do have the same values
yes.
day by day. I think that's also pretty nice. I use it a lot, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I use it too.
Good. So Thomas, you?
This is also, of course.
Okay,
I use it.
All of us. Good.
This is probably also the place where you set your time zone based
yes.
settings and
Ah, we come to that later. That's very special. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll be on a podcast, so we can do any swing we want to do. Yeah. There is, but now we have a personalization layer. So maybe that fits in well. We have some very special TM personalization only. I mean, TM is a global business. So the time zones come into play here.
So,
just a warning. So now we are leaving. Let's say generic. Talking about FPM and layers, but we are now talking about something TM specific, the user settings for what?
Yeah, so we have we technically persist in our database all events, I mean all everything that is related to a date in the time as a timestamp. The timestamp is stored in a UTC format, so it's a green
universal time. C stands for Samsung, we don't remember, but it's the same timestamp.
The time, it's all the times are saved
in Greenwich, Greenwich Mean Time. Summer and winter time, right?
Yeah. Of course, when displaying the data, you probably want to display it in a readable format, so that means a date and a time. And when talking about time, now as Ben mentioned, is a global business. Comes the location specific times. Our US listeners may be very familiar with that.
Russian business, even more, huh?
Yes,
10 time zones, or it used to 8 now, right? Well, many times, more than 2.
Yes, also for instance. Yeah. Normally the local time zone is the one that is important, but of course we allow the user to say even if the local time zone is the default way to display a time.
Local means the time zone of the location where the event happens. So if I ship something from New York to LA, then local time zone would mean the local time in New York for the departure and the local time in LA for the arrival.
Exactly. So this is the default way to do that in transportation management, but of course we can switch it off and say, no, I want to see all the times in Greenwich Mean Time, or I want to see all times in Alaska times. Whatever.
Or my user time zone, right? It's a default user time zone.
Yeah. I want to see what happened when I'm awake, when I'm working.
Yeah.
And the second conversion that we do between our data is related to the distances. We store all our distances in TM as a kilometer base or metric system.
Yeah.
Actually, not metric, so kilometric is not kilometer is not a SI unit of measure, but we store it in kilometer nevertheless. But of course, we want to display it according to the local preferences. So we allow the user to say, I want to display the distances in my preferred unit of measure for distance. Yeah, if one wants feet or miles or whatever other unit of measures are maintained in the SAP system.
But that is on kind of user level, right?
Yes, so this is a personalization. So it is not something that we allow to be predefined for all users. We have a default behavior, but the user can change it. But this is, again, a user personalization.
But it's really then globally. I remember we have that requirement from our friends from the US that if they go to Canada, that the Canada status should be displayed in
kilometers
and the US then again in miles or so. So we are not that yet. Not yet.
We have only global settings. So everything in one screen will be shown according to that rule. We don't have yet country specific
state specific conversion then.
Now let's come closer to TM, I would say.
End of brackets. So we now go from the TM specific settings back to the generic world again. So back first, technology go stack, back to FPM.
So we discussed that our heart of any floor plan manager based screen is the feeder class. The feeder class serves a lot of purposes, and it's, as I said, the normal ABAP class. But when talking about a big project, we had at the beginning, we had to brainstorm a bit what we need to do in order to develop our screens. We had to do in a relatively short amount of time a lot of screens, develop a lot of screens. And if you look at our sub-TM screens, you recognize that we have a huge number of UI building blocks. We have many screens, and in each screen we have a lot of blocks. So we are talking about perhaps 2,000, 3,000 UI building blocks as of now, UI building block configurations. And of course, writing 3,000 classes it's quite ambitious task, especially considering our persistency. I'm coming to that. Our TM uses as a persistency and business modeling engine, the so-called BOPF, which is an acronym for Business Objects Processing Framework, which probably will be subject of another podcast series. It allows us to develop applications, to model applications in a very uniform manner. It's a nice framework to use. And then, of course, you realize that if you write 3,000 classes, basically all will do the same task. So inquiring, getting data in a standard manner from that standard engine.
Just use like 5 seconds for explaining what BOPF is. So basically, with this BOPF, Business Object Framework, you model business object, and one example for the business object would be the business object TOA, our business object. Let's say we have currently 4 incarnations of that business object, which would be freight order, booking order, freight unit, and transportation unit. But all go back to the technical business object TOA. And on the, that's the buying side, execution side, on the selling side, demand side, it would be the TRQ, the transportation request. Same, again, one business object, and then 4 incarnations as well, forwarding quotation, forwarding order, OTR, order-based transportation requirement, sales order, purchase order representation, and DTR, delivery representation. And then such a business object, like the TOR, would have nodes first, the root node, which is a common data on root level, the type, etc. Then you would have items, for example, as a subnode. You would have stops and stop successors, stages as subnodes, etc. That would be nodes where you define what are the fields that I really store in the backend. Basically, it also maps directly to database tables. Then I think important here also, then you have actions like I want to schedule, so I have a schedule action. I want to send to ERP, I have a send to ERP action, etc., etc. So more or less everything can be broken down to we have a node, we have actions, and then for automatic stuff we also have some determination. So in our example from before, the freight order we were talking about has a root node in the business object TOR. And then the freight unit again, that's the same thing. So and the booking order, and then as you said, if you have a general data for freight unit, freight order, booking, air, ocean, etc., that
repetitive task, not only because of the modeling, so the nodes that we involve, but also interaction with that engine is done in a highly standardized manner. So we have some interfaces which we call in order to retrieve the data, to modify the data. Reading the data to modify data or for executing actions. This is all the same. We have to do some administration at the beginning, then reading the data, and then put it on the screen, and then reacting to changes by using the interface for changing data. So this is the same all across our business objects. This allows us to increase the productivity because we have a similar way of dealing with that objects, and we can develop a uniform application. And at that beginning, we had the decision
New world 8.0,
yes,
right?
In the transportation management 8.0, we decided to go with a floor plan manager and everything. We had a look. We evaluated the possibilities. We try the various approaches, and then we come to the idea it's best to use a generic engine for that feeder classes. So not writing 3,000 feeder classes, which are similar, excepting for the node names, which have to take data from and put the data in, basically, but using generic functionality. And this generic functionality is called FBI, which is an acronym for Floor Plan Manager BOPF integration. So the Floor Plan Manager, our UI technology on the part, and BOPF, which is a persistence layer.
It's modeling of our object, right?
So this allows us to build all our screens basically with a couple of feeder classes. Well, we have also exceptions because that's how the world works, but I think over 95% of our screens use the three main feeder classes that we have. So the we have a feeder class for the forms, so for all formulas on the screens.
Forms would be things like a flat data, but just have flat. Just a flat collection of fields
underneath each other with a label and the input field. We have also a feeder class for the list. So just let's say what
the good list. Right?
It's a business partner list, for instance. And we have also a feeder for the so-called tree or the hierarchical list, which is a similar to the list, but has also some differentiating features, like collapsing the hierarchy.
And you have a hierarchy, right? So which we would need for like items.
So items,
overview, stages, even which is incarnation of overview.
You see, so this is so basically we have three feeder classes, and now these feeder classes do all the same operation. So they are responsible of getting data from the BOPF and putting on preparing for the screen, converting it, putting on the screen and reacting to changes and also executing actions. And now coming, how come that three classes serve so many UIs? Of course, they are parameterized. The feeder classes, so this is again, the FPM feeder class accepts the so-called parameters, and we can control the behavior of those FBI feeder classes by the use of parameters. So that means the same feeder class can be instructed to say, in this case, you're taking the data from the root node of business object or, but in that case, you'll take the data from the item node of transportation request or business object.
Okay, so currently everybody's eager to see that parameter. So coming back to our thread order general data, so how would I see that parameterization?
Yes.
So we said how to get into the general data, UIBB, right?
So there are two ways. So the simplest ways, which can be done very easily for prototyping and for very simple use cases, is to specify directly in the feeder parameter the business object name and the node name.
But first thing is, so I'm now a listener to their podcast. I want to see that setup. So how would I come from the general data UIBB to that setup?
Okay. So to see that, you would right-click on the UIBB in question, use technical help. Then you'll see that pop-up that we discussed before, and you'll have one link to the component configuration is called.
That is what we discussed before, right? Where I also would see how is the definition of that field. Do I have an F4 help for it? Do I have autocomplete? What kind of field is it? We first navigate there again as we did.
You'll be there then in the editor for that UIBB.
Okay.
And then on the general data part of that editor, so it's an editor that has also some general data, some action schema and form schema or list schema, so that means how you design the screen, but also has a general data with some parameters. This is and one of them is called feeder class, and the other part that you can find there is the so-called feeder class parameters. And if you click on that in any TM screen, you'll probably notice that the feeder class is the same. It has it's a class in the namespace BOFU, Business Suite Foundation, and then
it's one of the layers we are reusing with generic functions like BOPF, same layer like BOPF, right?
Yeah. and the class is generic, but then you see a list of parameters that this class accepts. Mm-hmm. And then in most cases, you'll see there an important parameter, which is called FBI view. In some cases, you'll see a business object and the node specified directly mm-hmm. there.
But typically, it would be the FBI view.
Yes, an this FBI is... view. And coming to another, what is an FBI view?
Yeah.
FBI view is a collection of settings which are maintained in a different place that allows us to control how this feeder works, this generic feeder works. Obviously, it requires the business object and the node, so that on the persistency side, but also allows us to specify a UI structure. So it allows us to specify which are the fields that I am using in my UI.
Just to be slow enough for me again. So if I want to configure my general data UI, that is, as we learned, generic web processing. So there must be something that tells the the floor plan manager what are the available fields, which is that feeder class, as we learned. And now we teach that feeder class about the fields by going into that FBI.
Yes, view, a normal right? feeder class, okay. non-TM specific, would have, it has an interface method which is called getDefinition, which is supposed to give back a field catalog. You'll take the field catalog, you'll hard coding it. In this case, we'll have a generic way. That means this FBI feeder class will take this parameter from the FBI view. And then we can specify which is the.
So the
data
FBI
dictionary structure that I want to use as a field catalog from my...
Okay, so in that FBI view, which is teaching the feeder class, the generic FBI feeder class again, I would first define a UI structure, which is basically you go to SEF, data dictionary is just a structure, which is an ABAP term for a list of fields, basically. That is a very...
FBI and FBI view perhaps are subjects for a podcast episode scene. But the basic idea, as you mentioned, is that you define an FBI view where the data come from, the business object and node. Where does it go? So in a structure which does not necessarily contain all the fields from the business object node. I'll come to that later why. And the third part is how the data is transformed between the business object format and the UI format. So we have a conversion class in place, which allows us to control how some backend related fields are translated into UI. So we're talking about timestamps, how they are converted into time, date, time, and time zones, or how object keys are translated into readable object IDs on the screen.
Okay. At high level, so in that FBI view, without that conversion, which is maybe already a bit specific, I would say, where does the data come from?
Yes.
In our case, thread order is an incarnation of Tor, as the
business
Tor,
object Tor,
and the root node, because it's general data, and in our case, most cases, maps to the root node.
Yes.
That is the one hand side. And the other one is I also define what are the fields that I see. Our root node is big, a lot of fields, but I only want to see like 10 or 20 of them.
Yes.
And that is defined in that UI structure.
But you also may define in your UI structure fields which are not even on the database. So for instance, we have in database a field for the carrier, but you want to see it's a key, it's a GUID, but you want to see in on the screen ID and perhaps also some additional information, the name of that carrier, address information related to that. We do not persist that in the document itself, but still you would like to see that on the screen. And that's why you devise your UI structure containing the fields which are really required for your use case. And not more. It is important that UI structure contains only the minimum necessary, which is required for that UIBB to be displayed, because otherwise we'll run into performance problem in floor plan manager in WebDimPro.
Okay. So Come back to our example. We define now the fields. Like good example, easy example is also the the document type. The document type is only stored in the root as a four character field, but you want to see the description also. Yes. And then you would define that type, and then you would have another field with underscore txt, and with some Dragos magic, it's then automatically more or less. Yeah. Come details in another episode into that text. Yes. Basically, so, that's the idea, right?
Yes. So how this conversion occurs and other how exactly in FBI in details works and our implementation of FBI works. Perhaps it's too much to discuss today, now, but I wanted to say that we have this generic. So if you see, it's quite a rich list of generic features. So on top of it, we have a collection of settings, which is called FBI View, which is instructing a generic engine, in this case, an FBI feeder, how to work. And this feeder, furthermore, instructs a generic functionality, which is FPM GUIBB, how a WebDimPro component should be built. And then WebDimPro is another generic functionality to generate HTML coding. So we have a couple of frameworks underway, which of course sometimes poses us performance problems. So we have to always keep an eye on how we optimize this stacked layers. Yeah, so it's not an easy task. It can be done, but of course, we were at the beginning also driven by too much enthusiasm and designed too many fields on the screens, and then realized perhaps we can do that in a more in a better way later. Yeah.
I think one clear lesson learned is the number of fields available or defined in a UI structure really matters.
Yes.
It makes a difference for performance. So we only, and that's why typically we only include the fields which are meaningful from our perspective and do not provide a all you can eat field catalog, because that is also, if you don't use that, it also affects the performance and negatively, not positively.
Yes.
That's why we do not have like a, huge field catalog, but then if you learn okay, there's a commonly used field or something, then we of course enhance it, but it's not we do not want to have all root fields or
others. Yes.
Maybe coming back, back to that general data example of that. We are now where in the FBI view where we kind of teach our field atlas what are the fields that we want to use for the general data. I think it's not in the general data, we not only have root data, but we also see things like for pickup and delivery, stop.
Yes.
So from, and that is a different node to
That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. Of course, our UI building blocks are not designed to match one-to-one our business object modeling, and the other way around, we do not model business objects so that the screen will be satisfied. Of course, in one building block on general data or also in the items list, you might have information which is spread over various business objects nodes or even over various business objects. And how is that achieved? FBI view as a collection of settings has a nice feature which is called related views. Basically allows us to chain other FBI views in a larger, create a chain of related views. And actually what this feeder then has as a field catalog and what works is the collection of all related. So in this case, you will have one FBI view for the root and we'll have one FBI view for an item and one FBI view for a stop. Mm-hmm. But then you will link those into the first FBI view, which has one related view for item and one related view for the source stop and one related view for the destination stop. And basically you combine data for four node instances into one UIB.
And I do that in that FBI view for the general data, where we can navigate to come back to that again. So remember, you can go into as an FPN config expert, you can navigate into that
configuration.
From there, you see that parameter, WebDimPro FBI parameter.
Yes, an FBI, but perhaps it's worth mentioning that FBI view itself, it's also persisted as a WebDimPro component configuration. Mm-hmm. It's the same transaction or the same application like the GUIBBs. So if you are in one environment, then you don't have to switch to another environment. So you can use the same browser window.
So in our example, we are in a general data, then we would go into that general data of that general data, yes. URBB, yes. And see the FBI view, which exactly. is then...
You'll see then an identificator, which is the name of a WebDimPro component configuration. You either can locate that in object or organizer, an AC80 or an AC84, or you just reuse the browser window which popped up with the configuration. It has a nice URL there, and just clear all the parameters of that application. So everything after the question mark and then press enter. So you'll be presented then with the configurator, with the WebDimPro component configurator, in which you'll paste that name of that API.
But you can also say, if I'm in a config UI, I can
use a new window, yes.
I would copy that FBI view parameter.
Name, yes.
That name, it would be like Tor root or Tor general, I think.
Yes.
Maybe. Sorry, you don't have that in hand. We also have no video since you don't have one, so we want to be on the same level.
Yes.
So we copy that. Then you have that button, more functions, new window.
New window, yes.
You paste it on the right hand side, and in that right window, you clear the left one, say display, and you're there. Right,
yes.
That is where you have the FBI view, where we define. Remember the UI structure, which is the fields available for that part of the general data, and then the node it maps to, and the links to the other nodes, right? Reset, relink in the general data to the first stop, which is the pickup location, and the last stop, which is the final delivery location, and the main item, which contains the resources. And that views, again, are FBI views with the same concept. They have their own UI structure. They have their own. I think you can also rename fields in that view. They also have a link to their node, and then magically you have the fields of that related
included.
So-called relative view also available in our general data. So you just, if you add another related view to the FBI views, which is used for general data, then if you go back to the configurator of that general data, then you see that additional field list.
Yes.
Okay.
Good. So the field catalog of an FBI view contains the fields from the UI structure attached to that FBI view, plus all the fields from all the related view chains.
Yeah,
these related views may in turn have also their own related views and so on. So the chain can be pretty deep. Unfortunately, we have a hard limitation on that. That is 15. So a chain of related view may not be longer than 15. And that is because the generated field catalog structure, which contains all those, also includes secondary keys, some sort of secondary keys required by FBI in order to work performantly. And the data dictionary structure, or a data dictionary table type, can have only 15 secondary keys.
So this I think it's not that bad. like a chain of 15.
So
it's
this is
also another. I think it will already run out of fields before, because I think every layer also adds a suffix, right? So if you see that fields with underscore S F like stop first maybe, and SL like stop last, the end, and I think every layer adds another three.
Yes.
I think typically you would have like multiple related views, but one or maybe two layers, but not more. I think also from performance perspective, it's not recommendable to have a too deep.
Yeah, in this particular case, if one can decide of designing two UI building blocks and put them together in so-called composite UIBB or in a tabbed UIBB, by still having two separate UIBB building blocks, from that's also increases reusability.
Okay, I think now we are at the end of our UI train already, huh? Just after 1 hour 13. But okay, I think we touched everything. So maybe let's now, we already went top down from the UI back to the last definition. Maybe just to wrap up, we go once again back, right? Mm-hmm. So we have our FBI view, where we define available fields, available actions, and basically how they map to the UI with that conversion class, I think that would be too much for today. Yeah. I think today it's more about the different layers, which is then used in the configuration of, which is used by the feeder class and kind of does the magic to easily define the FPM, to configure this generic FPM UIBB. As we said, general data uses a generic form UIBB, and with FBI magic, it's basically you can define what are the fields, what are the actions I want to use. And that again goes then to WebDynPro, which then renders that, and then it sends it to the business client, network business client, or the browser, or the portal to display it to the end user, right? Yeah. Okay. So, we already talked a bit about extensibility. Should we maybe briefly go through that, or would it be too much for today and we keep it for another session?
Yeah, perhaps say a couple of words, of course.
Yeah, maybe just use take an cases. Example. You want to extend the general data of the freight order again. So we've been there quite a while already. So let's take another Z field or Z field, depending where you are, to our root node, and you want to use it for freight order. Yes. So what would I do?
So after enhancing business object node, so that means you already have that field, then the first thing is to locate the proper UI structure that has to be enhanced. There are some ways to do that, and they're all described in our enhancement guide. But basically, after you located the UI structure that needs to be enhanced, you add the field there. If the field is named in the same as the database field, then you won't have to do anything. It will be taken over automatically.
That UI structure, which is defined in the FBI view.
So, as Ben mentioned, you have to follow this step. So, going from the screen to the UIBB configuration, from the UIBB configuration to its general data feeder class parameters, and locate the FBI view, and then opening the FBI view in the configuration tool. Mm-hmm. And there you see the name of the UI structure. And then you would add the field in that UI structure. So that's about the data movement. Of course, now the field is only in the field catalog and only in the context, but it's not automatically on the screen. What we also need to do is to enhance the screen and to use this customizing of the UIBB configuration. So you would open general data UIBB, but not in the editor. You can't, probably you can't even change it in a customer system, but using the it's a custom, using the customizing transaction. Mm-hmm. It's described in that FPM enhancement guide, how to reach that. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see exactly the same editor that you see as the developers, and you just take the field from the field catalog and place it on the screen whenever you like it.
And it comes into the field catalog because we enhanced the UI structure, which is then considered by the feeder FBI feeder class and presented to the UI screen.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. So enhancing the UI structure and enhancing the configuration would do the trick. Of course, in this particular case, the difficulty consists in finding the right UI structure. And
but now you are FPM config expert already, so now you don't have that difficulty anymore.
Yes. And of course,
don't we also have that policy, but I might be wrong, that we in the UI structure, that we also include extension of the corresponding node, so in some cases.
In some cases, we include also the extension include of the business object.
So it might already be there then, right?
Yes, so you have to check the UI structure. Mm. If it includes already the extension include of that business object node, then you don't have to, not even have to include, to enhance the UI structure. Mm. And only do the configuration part. Depending on the complexity of the requirement, you might need to take data from different nodes, and then you would have to create some other related views or something like that. Or you might do some coding enhancements, but then you have the normal coding enhancement techniques, so you can enhance.
And if I now, let's say, I have my not only my own field, but I'm a good developer, so it's a domain, I have a field value list, I think I could also easily just enhance that UI structure, not only with that field name, but maybe with another field, the same name, with underscore TXT and some Dragos magic comes into play then, right?
If it's yeah, so
domain value with fixed value list.
We're stealing a bit of show from the next podcast episode. Yes, when I mentioned that the data is persisted in one way and displayed in and screen in the other way. Mm-hmm. And we have a feature which is called a conversion class or a mapper class, which takes care of translating these two worlds. And we have some standard conversion that occur. One of them we talked about earlier. It's controlled by that user parameter is the daytime conversion. So we convert the timestamps into dates and times.
And time zone.
In time zones, of course, considering the user preference. But also we have the so-called code list description conversion. So we take some values for 0, 1, and depending on the data element and the domain which is behind it, we convert a readable text.
So let's say, as an example, you would classify your freight orders, like have an important field, which could have values like 01 important, 02 very important, and 03 extremely important. There's like nothing like an unimportant freight order. So you would do that domain definition. I think that's normal ABAP. Yes. Then you would have that field only with 01, 02, 03, or customizing table also with more values in it. Then you enhance the BO. Then you have just that additional in the UI structure, you would have just another field with the same name, but underscore TXT.
Yes. And so then, normally, whenever you do such conversion, you have to define the mapping rule, how the data is transformed. But you also, that Ben mentioned magic, we use naming convention in some places to
auto... Magic, it's only naming conventions.
Generate such mapping rules. So if you have a field which is called lifecycle in our persistence in node, which has some values 1, 2, 3, 4, and then we have a field lifecycle underscore TXT in our UI structure, we try to convert that 1, 2, 3, 4 values into readable status in this case. So it's in process or cancelled or whatever it's
that coming status, from that definition of that values, right? Yes, coming from customizing table, hard-coded domain values.
Yes, okay. So if you have a customizing behind it.
So that comes for free, text, right? So if you follow that naming convention, slash magic, then it's automatically considering. That would be if you do underscore TXT, it would check for the domain customizing
values. The so-called code list provider, which is another basis functionality that we have, which looks into domain fixed values or look into the customizing or in the check tables. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple of places where this is
determined. So that would be that TXT. There are other magic suffixes?
Another magic suffix is daytime time zone conversion. So if you have a field which is called whatever departure, my timestamp. It is called my timestamp in your business object. By having my timestamp underscore D and my timestamp underscore T and my timestamp underscore TZ in your UI structure, will automatically try to do a conversion between
time from the T.
And time zone for TZ. Only day is mandatory to be defined in the UI structure. The other ones are considered as optional.
And how would you, like you said, it's location dependent? Is there also some magic for that? Or?
For location, we don't have any magic because you have to specify which is the location for that, and we can't get it from the naming convention. In our enhancement guide or in our next podcast topic, we'll discuss about in more detail about that. And another magic is the so-called location description. So if you have a location field in your backend and in the UI structure, you'll have a field with the underscore loc t, automatically will try to determine the location text. The location text is the one that you maintain in the location master data transaction for a specific location.
Okay.
For instance, plant whatever or customer X, Y, Z.
Ah, maybe there's one more hint. So if you, we said we now have that new field, you have it in the UI available, and we put it on a UI. I think you also then have to define, is it just a read-only field, which would be a text view in a convention, or is it an entry field? And if it's an entry field and you want to have a reaction to entering any data, you also have to set a parameter at the very end to, what is it, FBI default, right? Just some tips and tricks sections.
Yeah, so this
yeah, you have action, a new field and you want to... Yeah.
This controls, it's an FPM feature that control that allows you to control in the UIBB that something happens when you press enter in that field.
Nevertheless, by default, nothing happens.
Yes, by default, nothing happens, but nevertheless, the data, you don't lose the data. It's not a prerequisite to adjust the screen. But the next round trip, so anytime you push a button or press enter in another field that reacts to enter or switch the panels or whatever do that triggers a round trip, that value that we entered in that field is automatically transmitted.
But typically, you would expect if I enter something into a field
and press enter, then a round trip occurs. Yeah. So this
and
is a.
To achieve that. You have to set that, what is it called?
It's an event, which is called FBI default, which can be attached to the field. It's a part of FPM configuration.
Yeah, I think you can just check, a good hint would be just check the other fields on the UI. Same thing if you want to have an autocomplete, which is a pretty nice feature, which is calling the search help basically, and already while you are typing already calling the search help.
It's a settings in the UIBB configuration, which is called suggest values. Yeah. And you activate
which is also
it.
Off by default, right?
It's off by default.
Activate it. But typically, it makes sense if I have a field list, then I want to get that. Right.
Makes sense when the response time is. I mean, if you have domain values or simple values, but if you're looking for a complex query in backend to serve that, sometimes it's annoying to have a wait.
But okay, but typically if it's normally, I think it's fast enough.
Yeah.
That help and then it helps you. Typing.
Yes, of course. But
even without any specific features, if you type in any value for a new field, it will still find the way to the database.
Yes, yes.
So you'll get that everything for
Yes, if you type. So this is something that WebDimpro engine handles, or whatever you type in the screen, they make sure that it reaches the application. And in our case, the feeder class, and in our case, the FBI feeder class, and he handles that and sends it to.
You can also check if I key in nonsense, if it's a domain value, fixed value list, if the UI would already check that.
Yeah, so there are a couple of validations which are taken care of directly by WebDimpro. Mm-hmm. For instance, typing a date into a or a character into a numeric field or into a date or non or invalid date format or something like that. These kind of mistakes or this kind of false input do not reach our application at all. They are captured by WebDimpro and you are instructed to enter proper data which passes these basic validations. And of course, we also have our application has also ways to handle application specific validation. For instance, typing non-existing business partner, WebDimpro doesn't have any way to check that, but it's application side or even validations which
That would be above topic then.
Yes.
Taking the date topic and also the time, so that's one of my favorite UI conversions we have. So if you enter a date, you can in SAP world like 12th of December 2012, you can just key 12 12 12 instead of 12.0.12.2012. So that can be very fast. And also for time, so just key in 10, it's 10 o'clock. It's not that you have to key in 0010.
Yeah. So this is SAP general feature.
Not very well known. So please tell everybody to just key 12.12.12 instead of 12th of December 2012 or 13 or whatever. Then that saves overall a lot of time, I think. Yeah. So pretty much it. 1.5 hour. So now, after reading, listening to that twice maybe, or depends, maybe three times, and reading some FBI config, then you are allowed to set that user parameter to FBI config expert with true. Maybe you can already start with it without true, maybe with an M like maybe or so. And yeah, start exploring that world. I think we will have some follow-ups on deep diving into other aspects of that, but I think high level, we went through all levels. I hopefully were able to explain which level is responsible for what and what's on that. And I even were able to talk about date conversion. It makes me happy. Yeah. Good. So enjoy all our UI levels and stay tuned. More episodes are about to come. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.